If we do nothing on our project, sitting at the valuation that we have at substantially less than 0.01 times our net asset value, and the copper price goes from $5 to $6 to $7 a pound, I think this stock is going to go up 10 times.
Yeah,
let alone all of the good stuff
could go up.
It will go up, could go up. This is the most, in my opinion, the most levered name, not because of debt, but just because of the pounds per share of copper that we have, copper equivalent we have globally.
Yeah.
Leif, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining me today. So, listen, let's just set it up. Tell me about the start of the company and then the vision and then the project.
Yeah, sure. So the company's got a longer history than the sort of current era. So I'll focus on that current era. I mean, prior to that, it was a company focused on the southern part of the same district that we're in. And Serge was, you know, busy exploring and delineating deposits down there. But the kind of reboot of the company, if you will, started in late 2020, and essentially myself and Christian and a few other folks identified the opportunity as being a fairly special one in BC. There was some good resources held by Serge, but in the same district there was a mine and mill on care and maintenance owned by Imperial Metals. And then to the northwest of that area, there was a big known resource at a project called Berg. And so a few folks got involved. We sort of refinanced, recapitalized the company, and then started this consolidation strategy in that northwestern part of the district by doing a option deal with Centerra on the Berg project. Fast forward a few years, cleaned all that up. We own 100% of Berg now. Did several more deals in that area to grow our land position. Have drilled lots of meterage across both that project at Berg and the Utsa project that Serge previously had. So have built up a very significant resource base. And then last year, fairly big catalyst for us. We put out a maiden PEA on that Berg project as well.
Excellent. If you could, again, you gave me a little bit of the background. And hi, Christian. Nice to see you. It's been a few weeks. How are you doing, Christian?
Sorry, say again?
How are you doing?
Oh, good, good.
Doing good.
Adventus' share price is slowly ticking up as silver prices are strengthening. Yeah. By no means is life easier or less work.
Yeah, I got
it. It's not just like, oh, you announced a deal, it's done, but everything is ticking well. Circle will be out shortly. And I went to the Palm Springs Canaccord conference last week as a guest of Silvercorp. So I was sitting in multiple institutional kind of investor meetings. And it's always a good thing that as a deal moves along and you got time to reflect, after all the craziness before announcing it, you actually like the deal more. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of nuances to that Silvercorp business that will be exposed or exposed in a good way, that is, advanced over the next while to create good value.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I actually brought it up in another podcast, and it was a glowing review of that transaction. So it's with John Finnick. We just both said we thought everybody won. So well done.
But I will say something that is kind of like a very simple headline for Silvercorp. $10 million investment in the Ying mine in 2006. Resulted in $500 million of free cash flow generation from that mine since 2007. There is no other mine or company in the junior mid-tier space that I know of globally that has that kind of track record. And that I think goes to in your interview with Rick Rule, you know, why he's so impressed with Rui and how this company is executed. And I expect that kind of business acumen to follow through in our Ecuadorian portfolio. And of course, Leif is on the board of the Betis. And so he's heard all of that and seen all of that over the last few months.
Excellent. Well, again, congratulations to both of you. So Leif, if you could, you told me a little bit about the project and I guess the nuts and bolts. Really, what's the vision? What do you want to take this thing, or what do you foresee in the next few to several years?
Yeah, I mean, I think our longer term vision of the way the copper market is evolving gives us a perspective that, you know, advanced projects, call it at the PFS or further, you know, feasibility stage, permitted even type projects of this scale in a jurisdiction of the quality that, you know, BC and Canada more broadly is a type of asset that is in short supply and we expect will be in much higher demand as the years tick by. So as it relates to the Berg project in particular, which again is our flagship asset, 100% owned PEA stage, you know, big advanced M&I stage resources, our focus there is really just to continue to de-risk and add value where we see opportunities to do so over the coming years. And you know, nothing new under the sun. That's always going to be the same things in terms of drilling high potential you know, targets either you know, in the existing resource area adjacent to it, looking to improve some of the key operating assumptions in the PEA around metallurgical recoveries, you know, various things like that. So we recently announced a funding package and a series of technical work programs there at the Berg project that will achieve a lot of that, advancing a lot of those kind of technical pieces towards a pre-feasibility study over the next year. Get us in a good position to ultimately table that type of catalyst sometime in the 2025 timeframe. And yeah, as always, we'll reassess from there what the opportunity set looks like and where we intend to take the project from there. But yeah, we think that kind of direction and path with a project that pencils the way it does, you know, as we've outlined in the PEA, is something that will be valuable and attractive in the marketplace. Beyond that, our Utsa project, again, 100% owned, same district, but about 28 kilometers roughly as the crow flies from Berg. Slightly different economic, you know, business opportunity. That one is more, I think, you know, tangential to the situation around Huckleberry. Huckleberry is the only care and maintenance status copper mine and mill complex in BC. Been on care and maintenance since 2016. Its owner, Imperial Metals, let's see what they decide to do. They got lots of other, you know, irons in the fire and priorities. But again, where the copper market is today and looks to be evolving could be a very interesting situation there where that mine is brought back into production. That should obviously bring a lot of kind of attention and sort of, you know, interest to the district that we're in. And we own a lot of resources that are in relatively close proximity to that, you know, situation. So I can't be too specific, obviously, but there's lots of ways in which we think we can, you know, find our way into, you know, having a type of exposure to that, that situation. So slightly different from Berg, which is your standalone kind of typical development stage project that we're looking to add value in through the drill bit, through you know, de-risking studies. So, you know, over the coming years, this pool of assets is something that I think will continue to you know, increase in value and increase in demand in the wider market. And lastly, exploration. It's a big district. I think it's uncontroversial for us to talk about it as one of the biggest copper you know, districts in Canada. You look at any of our sort of photos on our website, you can see it's an area that's got lots of forest cover, lots of glacial till, that sort of thing. What's been discovered to date has been the stuff that's poking out of the ground. Serge has made a few discoveries of stuff that is more blind and buried. the potential to continue doing that is very high. So, you know, every year we make, I think, pretty interesting, prudent investments in discovery potential, whether it's regional geophysical surveys, you know, target drilling, that sort of thing. So I think there's always going to be programs ongoing and potential for us to make new discoveries in this prospective district as well.
Got it. Anything that you could add, Christian, or you'd like to say?
Well, I just adding to Leif and maybe summarizing, I think that what we have at Surge is very strategic from a global copper moly perspective. That we have got a substantial molybdenum resource, and primary moly projects are high risk. Moly price goes up and down substantially. So if it can be a byproduct credit of a copper mine that does not necessarily need that moly to be a profitable mine, then that's the best case scenario. And this is one of the largest moly deposits or moly content as part of a copper project globally. And both copper and moly are critical metals in Canada. So I think Bird can really be a very important project for Canada and for copper moly production globally. And this district, I think, is extremely strategic in terms of multiple large deposits already. As Leif said, good exploration potential. We can add, I think, billions of tons to this resource base and make this district that we now control one of the most important copper mining districts in North America, right? And you get all of that for 35 million Canadian market cap. So the upside here is many, many times.
Got it. So if I can, I want to ask some questions with the risk of sounding stupid. So what is the ETA? I guess, what's the next thing in the process?
If you would, you've
punched a lot of holes. They look great. I'm assuming the next thing is a feasibility study. Walk me through that. And what's your ETA on that?
Yeah. So pre-feasibility at Berg, which would probably be a 2025 timeframe. So during the course of 2024, there's a whole bunch of underlying technical work programs that we are that are underway already that will underpin that level of study. So metallurgical test work being one. So we've got material in hand that's in the process of being sampled and shipped as we speak for you know, fairly large scale, large tonnage, multi composite met test program that's going to take place, you know, over the course of the next several months. During the field season this year at Berg, we're looking to advance and potentially drill test one of our best exploration targets around that deposit, which is called the Berg Southwest target. We are going to be doing some geotechnical work, geochemical work, environmental baseline work, et cetera. So again, fair mix of kind of PFS stage technical work and value-added exploration, we hope, which would culminate in a PFS study in the 2025 timeframe. I think you can think of the Bird project as an early 2030s project in terms of potential, you know, construction timeframe and production. So, you know, when we talk to major mining companies out there, that they're all sort of, you know, thinking about long-term planning. And so that's kind of the time frame that is relevant for them. For UTSA, and you know, just to back up for a sec, the resources at all these projects that we have are pretty advanced. Like, you know, 80 to 90% of the total inventory is in the measured and indicated category. So lots of opportunity to drill new targets, expand things, but there isn't a huge, you know, climb that we have to do in terms of infill drilling anywhere. So that's going to keep, you know, drill expenditures pretty modest and efficient, I would say, in that regard. So for UTSA, like pretty advanced stage project, again, lots of interesting exploration targets. I think the next steps there are really just, you know, waiting for that, that part of the district to sort of get back into production under Imperial's, under their watch, so to speak. And then opportunistic, you know, regional exploration opportunities are an annual occurrence, right? So we'll see what comes from that. But we've got lots of interesting recent discoveries, kind of targets that have had a few drill holes put into them that, you know, warrant further work. So all those things are underway.
Got it. So
Andy,
go ahead.
Andy, if we do nothing on our project, sitting at the valuation that we have at substantially less than 0.01 times our net asset value, and the copper price goes from $5 to $6 to $7 a pound, I think the stock is going to go up 10 times.
Got
that alone, all of the good stuff
could go up.
It will go up, could go up. This is the most, in my opinion, the most levered name, not because of debt, but just because of the pounds per share of copper that we have, copper equivalent we have globally.
Yeah, just to refine that comment, I mean, we've got an interesting couple of slides in our corporate presentation that I think speak to the deep value opportunity. And what we do is we just sort of look at the PEA or PFS or FS numbers, as the case may be, between ourselves and a handful of what we consider to be our closest peers. So that's kind of single asset juniors, large scale porphyry development projects, and studies that have been done in the last couple of years, and try to line up all those kind of key numbers, whether it's, you know, after-tax NPV or IRR or recovered copper equivalent over the life of mine. We try to line up all those numbers using the same commodity price assumptions so that it's as close to apples as you can get. And the takeaway from that is the Berg project just on its own, and by extension Surge's, you know, market trading enterprise value, is many multiples below all of these peers and sort of averages taken across the peer set. So to Christian's point, I think without us really doing anything to add further value to what we've outlined already, there's sort of a 6 to 7x potential return potential for us to trade in line with that peer group. So again, I don't think we're reaching here. It's just sort of it's a data set that anyone can scrub or recreate themselves. There's a sort of deep value mismatch between what Surge has at just the Berg project and a wide range of peers out there that you know, folks can get comfortable with underwriting a potential, you know, multi-bagger return, you know, without us having to go and invest further capital, make discoveries, you know, reach some kind of forecasted level just based on what we have already. That's the degree of under valuation, so to speak.
Yeah, we got it. So a couple of other questions that I typically ask that makes me very curious about. So what does the permitting process look like, if you would? So you get your feasibility study done, and then you get permitted, right? So what's the ETA in that? Are we looking at 2 years? We're looking at 4 years out to get permitted?
Yeah.
And that depends a lot of bureaucrats. I get it too. So,
yeah. So, I mean, the Berg project is a big sort of potential mining project. So the scale threshold would absolutely kind of kick you up into the federal system here in Canada. But, there's a lot of kind of coordination and overlap between, the province of BC and Canada in terms of sort of running projects of this scale through the environmental assessment process. So we're not there yet. I think coming out of a PFS is when you would really solidify your project description and, you know, hope to have the multiple years of environmental baseline that we're really just starting to gather this year to start to enter that process. And so, yeah, it's hard to say, but As I mentioned, it's probably appropriate to think about the Berg project as like an early 2030s. And when I say early, I mean kind of 2030, 2031, 2032, that time frame in terms of reaching that stage of you know, being permitted, being at that feasibility stage, and being in a position where you know, an entity could be making an ultimate kind of final investment or construction decision. So we haven't entered the permitting process yet. We're not guiding any timelines to that, but I think early 2030s is a reasonable time frame to get from where we are today to that ultimate construction.
It seems like a long time, but these are
30 to 50 year assets though, right?
So exactly.
That's a good answer, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And traditionally it's taken 10 years, which is the back of my mind, for the full permitting process of British Columbia. But we've heard from the federal government in Canada that when it comes to critical metals and minerals, they're going to fast track the process.
Good.
There isn't an example of that yet in terms of a size of a project, critical metals, starting from scratch like Bird. So we're assuming in this case that Leif is assessing that the process is going to be cut in half. Terms of timeline.
That's what I want to know. And that's, yeah, that's great answer. Go ahead.
I mean, part of the bull case in copper in general is the challenges globally for the industry to respond with new supply. These projects, by their nature, are big. They're complex. They require, proximity to infrastructure, or you got to build new infrastructure, right? So lots of research and commentators around talking about the average timelines from kind of greenfields to production on these things being 10, 15 years. So again, you look at Surge and all of its peers, there's nothing different between us and anyone else in that regard. Like these projects take a long time. And I think that is what sort of underpins a lot of the, bullish views on the future path that the copper price and the copper market is going to take. So investors looking at these types of big porphyry projects, it shouldn't be through a lens of, how are you going to get into cash flow soon? These are strategic assets that are few and far between, especially ones that can find their way through to a permitted constructible status over the next 10 years, right? And those types of assets, if you get them to that position, are going to be valuable to a wide cross section of the global mining industry at that kind of, mid-tier and above category, regardless of what subsector they're in today. Lots of gold companies, lots of diversified miners, in addition to the incumbents in copper, are going to be looking for these types of things over that period of time.
Yeah. So yes, thank you. A few other questions is the finances. If you can talk about that, what's the plan moving forward? And again, I say that as an investor, and I haven't invested in Surge, but I'm always looking at somebody's finances to see if they can withstand, if you would, downtimes or just this whole process, and what are they going to do to make dilution minimal? And it's not so much that I have an issue with dilution. I don't, as long as it's going to better the company, if you would, and further the project along. So that would be my first question. The second question is, what are you doing to get the word out? Because it sounds like, in just talking with you, you have a great asset here that everybody would need to know about. Do you have a plan on getting this word out? And then lastly, you mentioned infrastructure. Talk to me about the infrastructure there, because that could be one of a huge expense if there is none. So,
yep. Okay. So number one on kind of current finances. So about a month ago, early April, we announced a funding package totaling about 5 million Canadian. Two components to that. First component, $4 million strategic investment from a company called African Rainbow, ARM for short. They're one of the larger diversified mining companies in South Africa, operate a bunch of different assets and a bunch of different commodities, nothing currently in copper. Very interesting transaction for them. This is their first kind of outbound transaction into Canada. So yeah, $4 million, they're going to, at closing, own 15% of Surge. We did sort of a top-up sidecar financing in conjunction with that for an additional million, and that was just to, regular public market investors. ARM deal is expected to close in the coming weeks, so that will, as I said, total about $5 million in gross proceeds to the company. use of proceeds there is going to cover all of these kind of technical work programs underlying a pre-feasibility study that I previously mentioned. So metallurgy, a bunch of other stuff, including some potential exploration target drilling as well. So that'll kind of take us into the 2025 timeframe. And just to give you a sense, like Surge has a very low operating cost, both at the corporate G&A level as well as in our sort of area of operations, per meter drilling costs in central BC when you're not using helicopters is extremely low. It's sort of sub 200 Canadian all in per meter. Over the recent years, we've had it as low as $175 Canadian per meter. So very efficient place to work. Corporate G&A is sort of less than $1 million a year. So last year, for instance, from 2023, we funded the company on a $4 million treasury for like 18 months almost. So it's a pretty efficient operation in that regard. During that period, we delivered PEA, drilled several thousand meters, had a fairly fulsome summer exploration program. To your question on kind of dilution and how we as a board and management think about that, I think a pretty good track record over the last few years. Again, I'll point people to our corporate presentation. One of the ways that we think about this is, you know, yes, you raise money and you know, if you're going down the route of all equity, which we certainly prefer to do all the time, you are at the top level diluting shareholders. But the question is what you get on the back end for that investment. So over the last few years, we've raised over $20 million, all of that, the vast majority of those proceeds going into the ground, into drilling off resources, updating resource estimates across two different projects, multiple different deposits, delivering economic studies, et cetera. So it's lots of ways to think about fundamental intrinsic value measures per share. I think the simplest, cleanest one that we put in this, in our presentation is measured and indicated category copper equivalent pounds per fully diluted share outstanding. So a bit of a mouthful, but that's just sort of resource pounds in the ground per fully diluted share over that period of time. That number we have managed to increase at about a 67% CAGR over the last 3 years whilst doing those financings. So an investor that was with us in January 2021, if they didn't participate in any financings and were technically diluted, they still would have seen accretive growth in a per share intrinsic value metric, such as pounds per share. You could obviously do the same thing with, PEA, economic studies, or if you're doing your own financial models, kind of a NAV per share. And I expect you'd see similar growth. So that's a long way of saying that we think our financings have actually been accretive on a per share intrinsic value basis over the last couple of years. And we're obviously going to target to continue doing the same going forward. Next question, just on, getting the word out. Yeah, I mean, we are, I think, measured in our approach to marketing and so forth, but love coming on podcasts with folks like yourself. And I make the rounds to conferences every year. We are we're kind of an open book, so run our own sort of social media and email lists, and have I spend a lot of time talking to people who are market participants across the board. So continuing to push on a bunch of those channels and get the word out. Sure, we could always do better, but that's the approach. And then circling back to infrastructure. So, this is a bit of a different topic, but I think, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, where we are in BC is very special in that regard. A lot of people would be familiar with the Golden Triangle in BC, which is that area kind of close to the Alaska and Yukon border. Wonderful geology, but not a lot of infrastructure. Plenty of gold mines have been advanced and some built in recent years up there, but lots more challenges to put a copper project into production up there, given lack of roads, lack of power, etc. Where we are is fundamentally very different. There's lots of industrial development around us, the Huckleberry Mine being one example that I talked about, road and power line associated with that. But there's lots of forestry operations where we are. So there's lots of road access kind of, you know, all across our tenements, which is why we don't need to rely upon helicopters much, if at all. You know, big investments recently. TC Energy finished the $14 billion Coastal GasLink pipeline just north of us last year.
So you have power?
Well, we don't draw grid power today, but the opportunity is to connect a like a future mine development to the grid are very straightforward and uncomplicated. There's multiple options within a 50-kilometer radius to do so.
That's
we're
a good
not,
question.
Yeah, we're Excellent. Not look we're not relying upon government funding to build a, you know, huge road into the area or anything like that. It's all pretty tangible and straightforward from where they're set today.
Generators.
Correct.
Okay. Excellent. Anything you wanted to add, Christian?
Well, on the dilution aspect and creating value, another way to look at it is in the Surge presentation, I think near the front is a, we call them, they're tables on leverage to the copper moly price. And this goes back to the comment, we do nothing and just follow the metals price. How does our net asset value per share change? And Leif, you got to correct me if I'm wrong here, but if we go from $4 to $5 a pound copper, the NPV 8 after tax goes from $2 to $3 billion.
Yeah.
And that can be done without our shares outstanding changing. So you could do it on an M&I resource, or you can do it on an NPV basis. And that's not even including our Huckleberry options. So that goes back to the crazy leverage.
Yeah, on. I see.
In terms of outreach, we have a very strong board with successful professionals that have done lots of great things in this business. Everyone has their own network, and we're all over the world all the time talking about mining and also Surge. So last week I was at the conference in Palm Springs and I was talking about Surge, but John Dorward and Richard Coulter, John on our board, were key drivers of the success of Rocks Gold. They know everyone in the business. So they're out there talking about the story. So I think that our board is a big part of helping Leif get the story out. And on infrastructure, echo everything Leif said. Yes, we're remote in terms of, you know, large populations of people, but that's actually a good thing. You know, we're not too far away, so it needs to be a fly in, fly out, but we're far away so that our project doesn't affect any major communities. And we've got a road to the project. We drill for very cheap and we've got multiple power options. And we're close to the Pacific Ocean and ultimately our products are likely to go to Asia. And so when it comes to major porphyry development projects, I think we're well ahead of most of the peer group, especially when you're talking about projects in the remote Andes, as an example.
Yeah. No, you answered that well. I'm actually, I'm from up there. I didn't know if you knew that. I'm originally from Alaska and I've driven the Alcan Highway several times. And so, I might have been, I'm sure I was close to your property at one time.
So,
well, in closing, Leif, anything you want to add in closing, and how can people get in touch with you?
I don't think anything in addition to add. I mean, I invite people to have a look at the website and the corporate presentation. We got like a virtual site visit available right on the homepage. You can kind of get a sense for what things look like. In terms of getting in touch, you can email me directly. We've got, you know, an info@email, which ends up in my inbox, social media as well, LinkedIn, Twitter, et cetera. So yeah, again, I think our contact information is readily available on the website and happy to hear from, you know, interested folks out there.
Yeah. I will link to all of this in the show notes, in the YouTube and the podcast show notes. All right, Joan, Thank you so much. I'd love to have you on again soon, maybe in the next few months. You might be busy, Leif, in the next few months. I'm assuming you'll be out in the field. But yeah, when you have time, I'd love to have you on again.
Great. Sounds good. Keep in touch.
Thanks.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, guys. All the best. Thanks, Christian.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.